Chats, the show where I, Josh Pickford, founder of Baremetrics, hop on a call with other founders and get the stories of how they started and grew their businesses. This week, I talk with Benji Boxer, founder of Parsec, a game streaming company. In this episode, we talk about gaining startup experience while working at other companies, managing risk, maintaining personal momentum, the importance of celebrating small wins, building consumer-facing technology companies, and more. Hey, Benji, thanks for coming on the show. How's it going?
Really great. Thanks, Josh. Really excited to be here and to chat with your audience.
Yeah. So to kind of kick things off, so you run, I would say, sort of to some, it'd have been like a two words here, like a gaming company, or like, you know, you deal a lot with games. So what's your favorite game?
Yeah. So my co-founder makes fun of me a lot for it, but my favorite game is Civilization. The Civilization series, and he makes fun of me because he's like, you know, that's not like a real game, but you know, man, it really is a real game. It just never ends, kind of thing.
Right. Well, that's the best kind, man. Like, you can just, you know, there's like an infinite number of ways to play it.
Yeah, exactly. And infinite number of ways to click as well.
Right. Well, so how do you balance like building a company and then like not getting distracted by the product itself?
I mean, building a company, as you know, is all encompassing. So right. I do try to use the product a little bit, just to like, number one, because it's fun. Being in gaming is fun, but I definitely do less gaming because I run a company.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yep. Well, so I, to back up a bit, I would love to kind of get your backstory and like all the way back to the beginning. So like, what were you like as a kid? Where'd you grow up? That kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, all the way to the beginning. I was born on October 15th. No, just kidding. So I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and my parents were both entrepreneurs, actually. So my dad was an entrepreneur as a doctor. He started his own private practice. And my mom was an entrepreneur in that she sold basically like stethoscopes to doctors and other things, and nurses and other things like that. And I always joke that like her business would have been great in the internet era, but in the non-internet era, it was a tough business because she had just like gone to the internet and sold all these stethoscopes all over the world. But instead she was like restricted to selling them to the couple hospitals in Milwaukee. I think we all we do get some sort of like, I don't know the right word, but like imprint from our parents and watching them build their businesses. And whether or not I knew it at the time was probably imprinting on me the desire to build my own business as well.
So they're both technically ish, I guess, in the medical, I mean, your mom's selling stuff to, you know, medical professionals and all that. I mean, like, did it feel like you like grew up in the medical industry, or was it just sort of like irrelevant what it was that your parents were doing from the entrepreneurial perspective?
No, my dad has in his office framed his father's medical school diploma, my dad's medical school diploma, and my sister's medical school diploma. There's no framing of my college bachelor's diploma. So it's definitely the family is a medical family and you know, values the medical profession. My dad and my sister continue. I mean, my dad's still a doctor. He actually has gone into more like technology in medicine. Mm-hmm. He helped start a company called Teladoc, which is a telemedicine company. And he wasn't like a founder, but he was one of the first employees. And then he now works with a lot of telemedicine companies and things like that, while still practicing at the VA. But my mom actually went back to law school at 40. So there was always a pull towards medical school or law school. But eventually I decided to go to business school, like undergraduate business school. And from there, and my goal was actually to work in the medical field as a business person, but I, you know, got diverted when I like first started discovering the internet, I guess, as like,
right.
As it was growing. And I was like, this is where you want to be.
Sure. Well, I mean, so, you know, growing up as a kid, were you into gaming
much? Yeah, I play. So my genre of choice is really like real time strategy and turn based strategy games, and resource management type games, at least on the computer. And then, you know, I played far too much Halo and really got upset in when I would lose in Madden and FIFA. But those were like main games. I remember as a kid, I would have like 10 friends over, 12 friends over, and tether our Xbox. People would bring their Xboxes over and we'd tether them all up to play like massive games of Halo across different rooms in the house. Yep. So those were some pretty fond memories from high school doing that.
Right. I remember I had some friends in college who, like, in the dorms, they would literally punch holes in the walls.
Oh, I'm sure. Dorm loved that.
To run Ethernet cables so that, you know, it wasn't like, you know, up and down the hall. Yeah. So they were pretty hardcore about reducing some lag.
Yeah, well, you know, that's something that we focus on a lot. But the
right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I played a lot of, like, on the real-time strategy stuff, it was all like Red Alert and things like that, Command and Conquer. I love, like, you know, the Sim series and SimCity series and some resource management. I guess I was always destined to be like an operator of something because I always wanted to like manage the resources of the
game. Speaking of like resource management games, like, do you play or have you played much of Factorio?
I have not, but everyone recommends that I play it when they hear what I like.
It's the ultimate resource management game.
Yeah. Okay. I have to get into it. I mean, I don't know if it compares to Roller Coaster Tycoon, but it.
Well, I mean, you know, I was so big into SimCity that, like, my buddy and I, this is like, you know, in like junior high or something, like, if he'd come over and like spend the night, what we would like pre-plan cities on graph paper.
Oh my God.
Like draw it all out, tape all the paper together, and so that we could like plan out our whole city before we even started building. I mean, like, that's, you know, it doesn't get much nerdier than that.
Josh, I actually did the same thing. I would draw it.
There we go.
I didn't have a friend to do it with, though, so you were lucky. I would like sit in class and like draw out like grids and where buildings would go. Yes. So I hear you.
Oh man, that's good stuff. Okay, so I guess, I mean, you think of like your parents are, your dad's like a doctor, the whole family's, you know, pursuing something in the medical field, or your mom be going back to law school and all that. I mean, like, what do they think? I mean, so you going to business school, was that sort of like, okay, cool, like this is his step before he gets into some other, like, you know, more respectable field like law or, you know, the medical field, or were they sort of indifferent about what you did?
Well, I did take the LSAT after college, so there was some pressure for that. But, but, you know, I think my parents are great. You know, they really encouraged me to pursue what I wanted to do. And I really, you know, there was definitely a debate in the family about me going to law school or trying to start a business and things like that. And I tried to make very rational arguments about why I shouldn't go to law school and why I should like just go off and learn the ropes of technology companies and try and build a technology company eventually. And, you know, they were open to it and they were like, well, I guess you can always go to law school again. Your mom did it when she was 40. And I was like, yeah, but I never want to go to law school. That's like the worst case scenario. So sorry to all the lawyers out there, but that's really, you know, my family is very encouraging. So, it's really hard to like say anything negative about that.
Right. So you go to business school or undergrad business school, and what happened after that?
Yeah. After that was the financial crisis. So, I actually was supposed to be in Teach for America after graduating from college. And, but during the financial crisis, Miami-Dade County decided to defund history, to like stop hiring new history teachers. And that was what I was going to be teaching. So I didn't end up going to Teach for America. I went to work at the World Bank, where I helped, developing world countries manage their debt, manage their loans with the World Bank. And it was quite interesting because the developing world was actually in a much better place during the financial crisis than the developed world, because they didn't have any real debt. So we were teaching them the lessons of that we were learning from the developed world, as well as, you know, we spent a lot of time like getting them the best rates on their loans from the World Bank. So that was kind of my job there. And following that, I went to work at AOL, where I was on the M&A team there. And we did a lot of transactions, basically taking all of the money from dial-up and investing it in content and media companies. So right before I joined, we bought TechCrunch, and I helped with the onboarding of that. We bought a company called Pictela, which was an ad tech company. We bought the Huffington Post. We bought and then a company called Go Viral, a company just all over the place in content and media and things like that. And that ended up being like the foundation for what AOL was becoming, and ended up being acquired for when Verizon bought it a few years later. But
did you like that aspect of business, like the acquisition side?
I thought it, you know, I really thought it was very interesting, because especially in like, if you're in corporate development where you're working at the company, because you get like such a deep understanding of the strategic needs of the company you're working at. I did like an internship in investment banking while I was in college. I did not like that, because you had like no understanding of what the companies you were talking to really needed, but you had a good understanding of like the industry in general. But so what I really enjoyed about AOL's M&A team was getting that like deep focus and understanding what we were trying to build through acquisitions. But what I really wanted to do was operate and manage a business and build a business. So if I had stayed at AOL, I would have tried to like go work in one of the media groups to try and build a business there. But eventually I left to start a company that was doomed to fail immediately. But we tried. We worked on it for a year. Mm-hmm. I worked out with it on it with my buddy Kenny Chan, who now works at SpaceX. But we were working on essentially like a new investor relations software. Which is kind of what like Visible VC became, and what some other things like that. And we just we didn't have the right approach to it, but it was really a good learning experience, and we had fun doing it. So I really value that experience that I had.
What, I mean, do you feel like the product didn't work out because of, like what do you think was like the primary reason that that did not
work out? I mean, it's working for Visible VC. So what I initially thought was that there was no need for it. So clearly there was a need for it, because another company did it. So I guess the real fault lies with me. But when we closed it down, when we kind of thought this isn't like the main, so we started it to kind of piggyback on the Jobs Act, which was the crowdfunding thing that came out a few years ago. And we thought, okay, there's going to be all these companies that are raising equity capital, and they're all too small to like manage that process. So we're going to build a tool that they can use to kind of like communicate with their investors. And of course, the Jobs Act never really got regulated, so it didn't happen the way that we had hoped. And then we were like, okay, the next best place to look is venture capitalists and private equity firms. So we built tools for that. And what we kind of, and actually I had a great conversation with Mark Suster back then, where he said, you know, this is good, but my job is more about finding the right companies than managing the companies that I've already found and getting like real time data on those, which I think was a good insight. And what, why things like Mattermark and those other things like that are really valuable to investors is because they help them find the right companies. With what it was called Arcad, with Arcad, we were trying to kind of help venture capitalists manage their like portfolios. And then the idea was that eventually we would like build all the tools and become really awesome and move into the public markets. But, you know, we died pretty much like a year after we started. So that was kind of the end of it.
That would have been your first company to start, right? Like that you would consider yourself a founder of. Like, so what was that like for you, the very first thing that you sort of set out to do on your own to fail relatively?
Yeah, you know, quickly? I think like the biggest lessons I learned there is, and I still believe this, we could have made a business out of it, right? And as a founder, you have to just like inherently believe that no matter what, you will find a path to success. No matter if there's competitors, right, if like Google builds it or whatever, you as a founder have to believe and be driven to be persistently working on something, and you'll find the right path. You know, it might not be the $1 billion path, but it'll be a business that is successful. And I think that when I was working on Arcad with Kenny, I think we sort of just didn't have the enthusiasm about the problem set, as well as we were just like, okay, it didn't work the way we wanted, so like, what do we do next, kind of thing. Which in reality, what we should have done is we should have just like made, although it's not pivoting, it's like making those minor like adjustments throughout the process to figure out what's actually going to be a business here.
Was it, I mean, you know, a lot of people make a big deal about going into things with a co-founder or multiple co-founders. For you and working on something like, was it helpful? Like, well, I guess, what did Kenny think about like this thing working or not working? Like, were those any hard conversations that happened around that?
You know, I think we sort of just came to the conclusion together. And you know, we were friends before, and we ended up like, you know, becoming roommates afterwards as well, after we closed the business. So it wasn't like, it didn't hurt our friendship or anything like that. Obviously it was like a little difficult at first, but really we just decided that it was right to shut it down, kind of thing. And just from like what we both wanted personally. And I think you have to like approach it rationally and try and decide what's going to be best for the co-founders. And I think that we approached it unemotionally. I mean, where it becomes difficult, I'm sure, is when it was also easier, by the way, because we had nothing on the line, because like, yeah, this thing was not working. If you're kind of like going along and sort of making it work a little bit, and just one person feels that there's a way to make this successful and the other person doesn't, I can see that becoming a problem. But like, Kenny and I were pretty much on the same page that we were not making this work at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this thing, Arcad, doesn't work out. You decide to move on. What'd you move on to?
I went to join a company called NewsCred, which is based in New York City. And the reason I went there was because I really wanted an opportunity to learn from a startup. They were about 20 people at the time. I wanted an opportunity to learn from a startup and from a founder that had a really great reputation in the like New York City ecosystem. And Shafkat, who's the CEO and co-founder of that company, had a great reputation, as well as the company was growing fast and raising lots of capital. And it just looked like a fun place to work. And I joined as a business development manager, but quickly started working on other projects and really got the best entrepreneurial experience I could have gotten, which was Shafkat basically said, I want you to build a new business for us, and you've got like 6 weeks to get it done. He also kind of read me like a book and said, nobody thinks you can do this. So as somewhat of a competitive person, that set the fire under me, and I built a business and really tapped into the resources of the entire company to build a brand new business for NewsCred. And I couldn't have done it without all the people helping me, but it was, and that experience though was just like incredible for helping me like learn, as well as test my skills in building businesses.
I think a lot of people, especially people who are probably at their core, you know, entrepreneurial and like probably don't make great employees. I think a lot of times like it, people downplay the value that can be had from going to work at another company that is, you know, like really growing, especially one that can like offer you the resources and the ability to just say, hey, go make this thing happen. You know, this can be really valuable and like a way to just like shortcut the sort of trials and tribulations of starting something from scratch on your own.
Yeah. And it was also just a great opportunity to get that experience with like no risk, right?
Right.
I mean,
yep.
If I failed, it would have been really disappointing. But failing there was very different than failing when you start another company with nothing going for you. You know,
this is a, I guess, a pretty common question, or at least maybe a common assumption that non-entrepreneurs have about entrepreneurs is that they are that they like are big into taking risks. But I mean, I would say most are actually probably pretty risk averse. Yeah. Like, where do you fall on sort of the risk scale?
I can't remember where I saw this. There's a great article about this where it talks about how entrepreneurs are actually really good at de-risking things. And I'm not sure where I saw that, but it's that entrepreneurs take very calculated risks. And I think that's what I do. Yeah. I'm not like sitting down and being like, okay, I think that the percentage risk here is XYZ. Maybe it's too risky. The way that I operate is I'm going to say to myself, I'm about like 80% sure that I'm right about this. And I'm going to do it. And if I'm wrong, I'll course correct as quickly as possible. And maybe that's risky. Maybe that's not, I don't know. I just try and, take action but I try not to take too much risk.
So you build this thing internally for NewsCred. Did it work?
It did. It really worked, actually. What we did was we built an original content studio. So NewsCred always had access to this incredible library of licensed content. Like, you could license an article from the New York Times or from TechCrunch or Mashable or what have you, and put it onto your company's blog. And at the time, NewsCred was also starting to build software to manage that whole process. But meanwhile, you know, there were other companies out there, and big Fortune 500 companies wanted the capability to create original content for their blog too. And the approach we took initially was, and this wasn't the like long-term approach that NewsCred settled on, but at first the goal was, we just want to sell more of our software. It was called the Content Marketing Cloud. And so I approach it as, okay, my goal here is to basically be a marketing tool for the Content Marketing Cloud. And so we priced it very expensively relative to what other people were pricing. And we went out and got really great writers for the content studio. But we didn't take a margin as NewsCred, and we focused really on making sure that the writers got paid quickly. Because one of the things that I did was I interviewed a lot of freelance journalists who were working on content marketing for big companies. And they cared a lot about obviously making money for what they were writing, but they cared more about getting paid faster. So we really focused on making sure they got paid fast. We didn't build any like technology for that. It was me tracking it and paying them as quickly as I could. But that, you know, building from spreadsheets to eventually being in the technology, the software, was how we got started. And we sold it before it was even a thing, right? And we built a million-dollar business within a year, and $1 million of revenue. It was really quite exciting to work on. And I could not have done it without a few really great people who were helping me with it. And from like the content side, I had someone named Claire Lambrecht who was helping, and Amelia Pisapia, as well as from the marketing side, this woman named Erica Velasquez, and another woman was really helpful, was Andrea Hong, who now works at WeWork. So all these people were really helping me get this going. And then once we got it going, I sort of stepped away from it, actually, and went and worked on product. And those people ended up taking it over and really taking it to the next level.
So, I mean, how long were you at NewsCred?
About 3 years.
3 years, okay. So how does the transition go from, you know, building like sort of content management and licensing stuff into building Parsec as a game?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, right? Like, I think, so when I joined NewsCred, it was more of a media company than it was by the time I left. It was really a marketing technology company. And when I started working at AOL, and even before then, I had started like an advertising business in college. So I guess, or I hadn't started, I managed it. I took it over. My background was always like interested in media and advertising and entertainment. And so news credit was a bit of a diversion from that as we were working on the marketing stuff. And I wanted to get back into media and entertainment tech. But I would be lying if I knew that that was going to be gaming, right? What really happened was my co-founder, who I've been friends with for now at this point, I guess 11 or 12 years, came to me and he had been playing around with streaming technology and thought that there might be an opportunity to build a really cool streaming technology around gaming. And I said, that sounds like a lot of fun. And we've always talked about how we wanted to work together on something. This seems like a good time for me to try that. So that was really the transition. I played games, I liked games, but I wasn't, you know, set my entire life on building a gaming technology company.
What made it feel like the right time, I guess? I mean, you know, from talking about risk earlier, like, you know, starting a company is risky. Starting a technology, something around like, you know, streaming, any kind of media, there's all sorts of risks around, even just, it's just an expensive thing, or it can be. So like, what made it feel like the right time for you?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I always wanted to work with my co-founder, Chris Dixon, and not the Chris Dixon that works at Andreessen Horowitz, but another Chris Dixon. But I always wanted to work with Chris, and we just thought that we had very complementary skills. And he was coming off of something, and I was sort of feeling like I wanted to get out of news cred, not for any particular reason around the business, but more just like for a change. You know, working at a company for 3 years is kind of a long time, actually, for millennials. You know, we're always changing our jobs. And I also had separately been like running a side business that brought in some money so that I had some savings that this was the right time that I could try this. And it just, yeah. And then basically I analyzed what Chris was presenting to me. He said, I've been playing with this technology. I think I can figure it out. And gaming, you know, is a bigger industry than I think you, Benji, may know. And I started researching that. And also, you know, looking at what the technology was that Chris was working on, I was like, okay, if everyone gets more bandwidth and everyone gets better heart, you know, like these ASIC encoders and decoders in their home on all these different devices, which both were very, not crazy assumptions to make, then there is an opportunity for this low latency game streaming tech. Also, I started looking at like where time shift data was going. And if you look at the time shift data in America, and especially in different demographics in America, it is astronomical how much time is shifting to gaming. And from my experience working in media and entertainment tech, I knew that you always want to work where time shift is going, and time is going to gaming. So, and I liked playing video games. So I was just like, okay, this sounds like fun. Let's do it.
So what was that process like to get it started? I mean, like, did you like cold turkey cut out NewsCred, or was there this sort of like transition?
So I was running product strategy for NewsCred at the time. So it had to be somewhat of a nice transition for the company, for NewsCred, that is. So I slowly like left after about a month or 6 weeks, I can't remember, of notice. And then I did some consulting to them to help them transition to the new product strategy person. But yeah, it was pretty cold turkey. I mean, one day I left NewsCred, the next day Chris and I were meeting in a co-working space.
What was that like to get, you know, it had been a few years since you had started your previous company. Like, what was that feeling like when you sort of first day kicking things off on Parsec? Like, what was that feeling like to like get to start something new from scratch?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the early days, it's like really exciting and nothing's going to kind of change that. There's a little nerve wracking, but, you know, if it failed within a month, it would have been like, oh, well, no big deal. I'll go get a job. Right. I mean, fortunately, Chris and I, and I'm sure you as well, Josh, have some pretty good, you know, have a good background and our skills are in high demand. So early on, it's like kind of just fun and you're working on something. And if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Cause you'll land on your feet. I think that it becomes more nerve wracking as like you start making momentum and you realize, oh, we might have something here.
How long did it take you to get to that point where you guys like looked at each other and thought, hey, this thing might actually work?
I think it was when Chris demoed the first version of Parsec to me, when I was like, oh my gosh, I can't really feel a difference here. And that was, so we started almost 3 years to the day of this conversation ago. We started in like February of that year. And then sometime in June or July, Chris showed me the first version of the tech. And, you know, as not being the technical co-founder, that was a lot of, this is a hard technology problem to solve, I think. And the approach, which we can get into, that Chris took was not the easy approach. It was very much the like difficult approach, but we thought the right one. So there was a lot of time where I was like, I don't really have much to do here. But so I'm just going to like, you know, cultivate relationships and talk to people. But, and while Chris was like, really working hard on the core tech. But when he showed it to me in July, I was like, this actually works and I can't believe it. And then there was a bunch of work to do. And our goal was to try and release some kind of very early version of it in September, October, something like that. And that's what we did. We released a really, really, really broken version of it in September. And by early, I mean, you had to use a terminal, a command line interface to start the app, and you had to set it up on your Amazon account, Amazon Web Services account on your own. We just gave you like some login credentials. And that was really the starting of the product. And, you know, the reception of it online was really positive. People really liked what we were working on. It was broken, and like 500 people showed up and signed up on the first day from our blog. We wrote a blog post, or Chris wrote a blog post about the technology, and people really liked the approach that Chris took. And they were behind it. And then from then it was another like year of just figuring out bugs and finding problems with it a year and about 4 months before we really had a consumer product ready.
I think a lot of times there's, you know, you mentioned sort of having this like broken, very hacked together first version. You know, I think that can work really well for something like the gaming industry, where there's probably like a disproportionate number of people who are like cool with having to jump through some hoops to make some technology work. At what point were you guys, was it that year and 4 months later when you're like, hey, we can start charging for this? Or like, are you still sort of like completely cash flow negative? Or like, what was the money situation the first year?
Good question. So I do want to point out, though, one thing that you said was that in the gaming industry, people are cool with broken stuff. And I think that's true. I think that's true. Consumers are, especially because it's free, are more open to that. You know, for the first like 6 months after that first day, you know, there were like six people using our product a day. It was like real, real slow. But we spent a lot of time with those six people learning from them. I do want to point out, though, that even in an enterprise software technology company, you can release a broken thing that doesn't work at all as your first version. That broken thing is you like providing a service as a person, right? That's like, that works. And that's what happened with NewsCred as well. When we released our original content studio, there was no software, no technology, nothing. All we did was I got a list of freelancer writers, and I like talked to, I think the Hartford was our first customer. And I talked to the Hartford with one of our sales guys. We convinced them to use those freelancers. And I managed everything by hand. And like the freelancers even submitted the articles via email, all sorts of stuff like that. So even enterprise software, they were paying us a lot of money for this, you can run it as a service, like as a service, it's software as a service. There's just no software at the start. So I think it's really important to test out your assumptions with something really broken, simple first, to make sure people actually want to pay you for it. Now, going to your question about now people are paying Parsec. We do have people paying for our software or for the cloud aspects of our software, cloud gaming. But we don't make any money on that. We are passing AWS fees and Paperspace fees directly to the customer at the same price that we're getting charged. So it's not, that's not a profitable model for us at the moment. But we did fortunately get some I can only talk about one, but we have several large companies that were excited about the technology that we were working on, and they paid us a licensing fee to use our technology. So HP pre-installs our technology on every Omen gaming PC that they sell, and we get paid for that. And they took like a serious leap of faith when it was just Chris, me, and one other engineer, I think at the time, working on this. And it was just a command line interface that they were working on. And they said, we see what you're working on. We're excited about it. We want to see it in all of our gaming PCs. So that really helped. And then we also raised some venture capital money just based on the very small amount of demand that we demonstrated and the technology working. You know, a lot of the venture capitalists in New York were excited about seeing the technology. It was a small seed round, but the technology alone was impressive enough to get them excited. Also, I think it helped us in New York that we looked very different from most New York tech companies. So, you know, Parsec looks like a real like streaming technology company. And there are very few companies that show up in New York, I think, like that. So that really helped get them interested in what we were doing.
How do you go from, you know, like there's the early, like if you're a year, you're say mid 2017, after you've got the thing's been out for almost a year, you've got people using it. How do you sort of like keep momentum up? Like, is it all word of mouth or some other
method? Yeah, for Parsec, it's been basically word of mouth. We do sponsor a few YouTube videos every month, but very much it's a word of mouth type of thing. And, you know, I think that when you say momentum, I think a lot of momentum is really actually you as a person maintaining momentum, enthusiasm for what you're working on. Doing a startup, as you know, is like a really mentally, psychologically taxing thing, I think. I feel like I never know if I'm making the right decision. There's so many forks in the road. I don't even know what like forks I'm making choices on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things I learned from watching Shafkat at NewsCred was just, you know, work, getting the next thing done, as well as maintaining a really like stable thought process on your business. So you don't get despair, you know, no despair during the lows, and you can't really, I mean, you should enjoy the highs, but they're very few in between, as you know. So enjoy them, but don't like celebrate them so much that you are like need another high tomorrow. You have to like, it's step by step. You're kind of just walking this road with 1,000 different routes you can take. And again, I don't even think I know any of the routes that I'm actually taking. I just somehow end up winding my way down the road.
How do you mentioned like celebrating the wins. Like, do you think that, or do you find that like they're not as frequently as you had hoped, or like do you have those more often than not? And do you think that it's more of just like a mental spit, like it actually happens all the time and you just have to be more sort of cognizant of it?
Well, I wish it happened all the time. I think that we do a really bad job celebrating our wins because Chris and I are very practical, I think, people, and we don't get like emotionally invested in any wins or losses, which I think can be bad. You should celebrate your wins in some way because this is hard and you should be excited about what you're, you know, you should celebrate when you do something right. So the biggest wins for me have always been when someone like, when it's clear that someone appreciates what we've worked on. So you get like a, you see a tweet, someone saying Parsec's awesome. Or, and I think I, you actually did that once and I like jumped all over it and that's how we kind of met. You know, someone says that, like one person probably said that every month, once a month, right? In the, for the first year. And that was like a high. Then we like created this Discord server where people hang out and talk about Parsec. And when we release something, all of a sudden there's a flood of messages of excitement, or sometimes it can be bad, but if something goes wrong, but there's that, you know, excitement and things like that from random strangers who somehow found your software and are randomly telling you that you did a good job. It's pretty great. And a great example of that is last week. I have no idea why, but last week, the number one esports player in the world, Sonic Fox, tweeted out that he's been using Parsec and loving it. And obviously, that's like a serious high. I was pretty pumped about that, right? And he, but the best part was not that he was sharing it with his audience, but that it was his audience was chiming in and being like, good job jumping on the bandwagon. It's awesome. I've been using it for like 6 months. Like that was awesome. That kind of like, unsolicited feedback really makes you feel great. And, this week we haven't had a tweet from any famous people about us, but you know, I can ride that high for quite a while, I think.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. It's, I think especially in the founder role, it's, you find yourself, or it can be easy to always be looking towards the, like the longer distance future. And then you just like sort of miss, all the little things along the way that sort of help you maintain the, what you're doing for, you know, years and years.
Yeah. Around. I mean, you know, I totally agree with you. And I think I actually do sometimes I think I do a bad job with this where, you know, even if you're seeing some success with your product, the, like, when you sit down and you start thinking about like years out or even 6 months out and you see all the risks on the table and all the like big companies that are doing things and you know, it's hard, like really hard. So you have to, and I don't know if I do a good job of like every day kind of remembering that this is a pretty fun thing to work on and it's a pretty great thing to be doing, but I think that's really important.
Yeah. Totally agree. So let's shift gears a little bit here. I'm curious, like, you know, you mentioned the HP deal and that you've got a few other sort of deals like that where people are sort of pre-installing things or, I almost picture those as being this like technology sort of licensing kind of deal on some level. Like, do you picture Parsec as being this sort of consumer facing gaming company, or from a business perspective, it's actually the where like all the money comes from is actually the sort of working with other larger companies to with the technology that
you have. It's really hard, right? When big companies are throwing money at you to solve a problem that they have, it's pretty exciting and it's easy. It's a uniquely awesome place to be. But we also have almost 1 million people have signed up to use Parsec. And that is quite an audience. Like, so what the way that I analyze this is essentially this way, and maybe this is like too rational. So I don't know. But essentially, you know, we've raised venture capital money and we've raised just over $2 million in seed funding. And when you take venture capital money, you're kind of committing to a certain type of business. And what I try to do is say, okay, there's a couple types of businesses that we can build. One is a consumer product that, you know, let's say best case scenario, everything works out and you become like one of these $1 billion consumer businesses, right? That's obviously like best case scenario. And I don't even dream of that actually happening for us. But right. That is, if you're looking at an option out, like a chart of options, that's like the number one return item on the chart. And it comes with lots of risk and all that stuff. The next level down is, if you can build a enterprise software company that's licensing technology, that's also a big business, but it's definitely not, you know, if you really hit a home run, you're not going to be as big as a consumer product, most likely, unless you're Salesforce, essentially. You know, both are extremely hard and both take a lot of time and effort. So you might as well go for the bigger one if it's an option to you. And as soon as it proves out to not be an option to you, and you still have, and if you're still fortunate enough to have the second option, then you can pursue that. Now, I say that as if like I'm doing a good job with this, but at the same time is we're doing exactly what you're told not to do in like the tech blogs from venture capitalists and all that. We are doing a little bit of both. And that is, you know, you read, don't do that. You have to focus on one thing. So I don't know. I'm kind of talking in circles, but that's how I think about it on a daily basis.
Yeah. I think the, you know, anything that's consumer facing, I think also has, or when the consumer is the end user, or who you're focused on, to me, that's at least sort of selfishly, like it's a more exciting thing because it feels like just it's the whole concept of like impact and like the number of people that you're having an impact on, right?
Yeah, and I think like, for instance, you know, we went as a team to Disney World just for fun. We were at Disney World and we were wearing, my co-founder Chris was wearing his Parsec t-shirt, and some Disney employee, either Disney is incredible at their job or this Disney employee just randomly came up to him and said, the lag on that thing is really great. And Chris was like, what the heck are you talking about? And then like all of a sudden one of the other guys on the team said, no, he's talking about Parsec. You're talking to the founder. Like that's pretty cool. It is a lot of fun to be in a startup that's focused on consumers in that way. Also, as going back to the beginning of the conversation where I like resource management games, video games, the resource management of a consumer product is very different and I think more exciting than the resource management of an enterprise company where you have to like staff up on sales and customer service and all that and marketing, and there's less of an emphasis on engineering and product because you have to spend so much of your resources on sales and marketing and customer service. Whereas a consumer product, you can spend all of your resources on engineering and marketing, which is, I think, more fun. So, you know, that being said, the enterprise deals are really enticing because that means we don't have to raise venture capital money again.
So, sure. It lets you stay in business.
I really enjoy owning lots of my company. So, actually, you know, this comes from my days in M&A at AOL, where I saw what venture capital money does to like ownership and outcomes for the people who dedicate their lives to making this business. And if you're not like, if we can show that Parsec is on the path towards potentially being one of those billion-dollar companies, which I don't know if it is at this moment, but if we can show that there is like a sliver of a chance, then it makes sense to raise lots of venture capital money. But if not, like it doesn't make sense, you know?
Well, so stepping back a little bit or zooming out a little bit here. So this sort of common thread, really, I think with all of the work that you've done, or a good bit of it, is around like sort of media and entertainment. I mean, in this case, gaming, that sort of falls under that, like all the content stuff, you know, producing things or working with with people about like producing things for people to consume. Like, why do you think that's a common thread? Is that like a just sort of happenstance or like you just have, that's a really,
I don't know. It became a big interest of mine, and maybe it was when I was working at AOL. But even before then, I was like doing advertising on Facebook when you still had to submit like your ad as a picture, when there was no ad tech in Facebook. So I always had some interest, and I don't know why, in using media as a way of like entertaining as well as communicating with people. I don't know where that came from, but I do really actually like to study media and advertising and entertainment, as like I read books about it, which is kind of weird, but yeah, I find it interesting. Like the media changes with the medium. So the medium being the distribution channel. If you look at the history of media, technology comes and then the right technology comes and the media like transitions to meet that medium, that distribution technology. I think that's a really cool thing to be working on. And that's what we work on at Parsec, right? We're building the distribution technology for gaming as a media. I also think that entertainment is a fundamental like part of every human's life. They want to be entertained and entertainment makes you happier. And I think it's very, very cool to work on that element of it. I also, though, like, am very interested in media, like in like the traditional media and how their business models work and all that. So I like taking lessons from all this stuff and trying to apply it to Parsec as a gaming company. But I don't know that if that answers your question, but that's just sort of an interest.
So what's the next sort of year look like for you and for Parsec to the extent that you can talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I won't really talk about specific features or anything like that, but the next year for us really is all about continuing our growth. So, you know, last year, in terms of like engaged minutes per week, we grew something close to 20x. So engaged minutes, meaning how many minutes our total user base played games using Parsec. So, continuing that growth is all that matters for our business on the consumer side. And but to do that, you have to do a few things. You have to like try and maintain a technology lead and focus on building really great things that people love and are clamoring for, as well as finding new ways to reach people and new experiences that people are willing and interested in trying. So, you know, those aspects of our product are really what I'm excited about working on. And also, I really want to this year try and test a real business model around the consumer product. I mean, I know that conventional wisdom says, wait until you're at 10 million users or something to start making money.
Sure.
But, you know, for me, I think it's kind of, you know, in gaming, people do pay for the things that they like. And, you know, what Fortnite's got like an ARPU of like, yeah, it's like an ARPU of like $82 or something. It's crazy. So people are willing to pay for something they really like. So in order to really test whether or not you have something that the consumers really like, you should try and charge them for something. You know, we charge them today for cloud gaming machines. And that's a small amount of people because they're paying for something. But the seeing if we can find other things that they're willing to pay for and making a real business out of it is what I'm kind of pretty excited about. And then if we can make a real business out of it, either we raise money or we just, you know, become a profitable, good, successful company.
Yeah. Would you be happy with that outcome? Like it's the whole, like, you know, go big or go home kind of thing. But like if go home means you have a very profitable business, like, is that an outcome that you're cool with, or like what's your real hope there?
Are my investors listening? No, I'm just kidding.
I'll make sure that they don't.
I'm just kidding. No, I think that there's basically you have to make a judgment call. And that judgment call should be based on, do you actually think there's a reasonable path to being one of these like hundreds of millions of dollars valued companies, right? If there's a reasonable path to that, then you should go for it. Like when in your life are you going to have that opportunity? If you're not sure if there's a reasonable path, then you should keep testing and seeing if you can get there. But if there's no reasonable path and you're like, listen, like we gave it our best college try or whatever it is, the opportunity is actually like a $30 million company. Like that's the best case scenario. Then right. Go for profitability. Do not raise capital because you don't want to be one of those companies that sells for $30 million after raising $30 million in venture money, because then you just wasted, you know, worked 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, like really, really hard just to get the venture capitalists their money back and you get nothing. So, you know, you gotta like, it's a hard judgment call to make because like the information is there's no information available to see what the future looks like, but trying to make a judgment call, I guess.
Yep. Okay. Well, so how can people follow along or get in touch or whatever you would like?
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, you can find Parsec at parsecgaming.com, P-A-R-S-E-C, gaming.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Parsec Team, and you can follow me, BoxerBK. Or you can email me if you have any ideas or thoughts or are interested in joining the team. My email is benjy@parsecgaming.com.
All right, good stuff. Well, that's all I got. Thanks for hopping on the show, Benji.
All right, thanks, Josh. This was really fun. I really appreciate it.
You bet. All right, there we have it. Benji Boxer of Parsec. Thanks for listening this week. If you need revenue analytics and insights, check out baremetrics.com. If you have any feedback, I would love to hear it. Shoot me an email, josh@baremetrics.com, or on Twitter @Spigford. Head to founderchats.com to listen to dozens of other conversations with startup founders. And if you enjoyed this, a rating on iTunes or sharing this with your friends goes a long, long way. Thanks again, and see you next week.